ಶಂಕರಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಶತಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮತಿ ಡಿವೈನ್ ಗ್ರೇಸ್ ಅಭಯ ಚರಣಾರವಿಂದ ಭಕ್ತಿವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಶ್ರೀಲ ಗುರುಪಾದಿ ಅನಂತ ಕೋಟಿ ವೈಷ್ಣವೃಂದ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ ಭಾಗವತಂ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ಸಂಬಂಧಿ ಕೋಟಿ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ಸಂಬಂಧಿ ಕೋಟಿ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ಸಂಬಂಧಿ ಕೋಟಿ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರು ಅನ್ ಶ್ರೀ ಗೌರಂಗ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ನಮಸ್ಕೃತ್ಯ ನರಂ ಚೈವ ನರೋತ್ತಮಂ ದೇವಿಂ ಸರಸ್ವತಿಂ ವ್ಯಾಸಂ ತತೋ ಜಯಮುದೀರಯೇ ನಷ್ಟಪ್ರಾಯೇಷ್ವ ಭದ್ರೇಷು ನಿತ್ಯಂ ಭಾಗವತ ಸೇವಯಾ ಭಗವತ್ಯುತ್ತಮ ಶ್ಲೋಕೇ ಭಕ್ತಿರ್ಭವತಿ ನೈಷ್ಠಿಕಿ ಕೃಷ್ಣಾಯ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ದೇವಕೀ ನಂದನಾಯ ಚ ನಂದಗೋಪಕುಮಾರಾಯ ಗೋವಿಂದಾಯ ನಮೋ ನಮಃ ತದ್ಭವಾನ್ ದಹ್ಯಮಾನಾಯಾಂ ಸಪತ್ನೀನಾಂ ಸಮೃದ್ಧಿಭಿಃ ಪ್ರಜಾವತೀನಾಂ ಭದ್ರಂ ತೇ ಮಯ್ಯಾಯುಂಕ್ತಾಮನುಗ್ರಹಂ ತದ್ಭವಾನ್ ದಹ್ಯಮಾನಾನಾಂ ಸಪತ್ನೀನಾಂ ಸಮೃದ್ಧಿಭಿಃ ಪ್ರಜಾವತೀನಾಂ ಭದ್ರಂ ತೇ ಮಯ್ಯಾಯುಂಕ್ತಾಂ ಅನುಗ್ರಹಂ ತದ್ಭವಾನ್ ದಹ್ಯಮಾನಾಯಾಂ ಸಪತ್ನೀನಾಂ ಸಮೃದ್ಧಿಭಿಃ ಪ್ರಜಾಪತೀನಾಂ ಭದ್ರಂ ತೇ ಮಯ್ಯಾಯುಂಕ್ತಾತ್ಮನಗ್ರಹಂ ಸಪತ್ನೀನಾಂ ಸಮೃದ್ಧಿ ಸಮೃದ್ಧಿ Vaishnavis.
Bhavan Dayamanaya Sapatninam Samriddhivihi Prajavatinam Bhadramte Mayayam Tatmanam.
Tat, therefore, Bhavan, your good self, Dahyamanayam, being distressed, Sapatnina, of the co-wives, Samriddhibhi, by the prosperity, Prajavatinam, of those who have children, Bhadram, all prosperity, Te, unto you, Mayi, unto me. Ayuntam, do unto me in all respects. Anugraham, favor. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, S. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki. Therefore, you should be kind towards me by showing me complete mercy. I desire to have sons, and I am much distressed by seeing the opulence of my co-wives. By performing this act, you will become happy. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita, sexual intercourse for begetting children is accepted as righteous. A person sexually inclined for simple sense gratification, however, is unrighteous. In Diti's appeal to her husband for sex, it was not exactly that she was afflicted by sex desires, but she desired sons. Since she had no sons, she felt poorer than her co-wives. Therefore, Kashyapa was supposed to satisfy his bona fide wife.
Om Ajnanati Virandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmelitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupatkadamakyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sahadutam Parijana Sakitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashchatya Deshatarine Namo Mahavadaryaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishna Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaurattishe Namaha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kantana Dhyakantana Stute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Shri Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Rupa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna.
Therefore, you should be kind towards me by showing me complete mercy. I desire to have sons, and I am much distressed by seeing the opulence of my co-wives. By performing this act, you will become happy. Today, we are reading from the chapter Pregnancy of Diti in the evening. We find Diti is comparing herself with her co-wives and feeling some kind of envy that they have children and I don't have children. I also want to have children. It's not very uncommon in this world for a woman to feel like this, because this material world is a place of envy. Like those who are not married, they are worrying that so many matches they have seen, 4 or 5 years have passed and nothing is matching, so they are in anxiety, isn't it? And those who are married, they are in another type of anxiety. Similarly, those who have girl children, first girl child they get, then they think, one more we will try. Second time also they get a girl. One more we will try. Third time they get a girl, then they may lament that I am not able to get a son. I am only able to get a daughter after a daughter. So, like Maharaj Romapad, he had a daughter. Actually, he was not satisfied with having a... actually, he had sons, but he didn't have daughters. He wanted a daughter, actually. So Dasharath gave one of his daughters in death to Dhrumapad Maharaj. So those who have many sons at home, they lament that we never got a daughter. And those who have many daughters, they lament that they don't have a son. Or those who don't have any children, they lament that, oh, we don't have any children. Alas, putrahinam, graham shunyam, they feel like that. And those who have too many children, they worry. Why did we get so many children? All our sinful reactions have taken shape of our children. And they are torturing us. They think like that. So, the nature of the material world is what you don't have, you hanker for it. You know, you always keep thinking about it and hankering for that. And also, comparing oneself with another person and feeling envy is not very uncommon in this world. She is very distressed by seeing the opulence of her co-wives. Like you find in the second chapter of Mahabharata about the great king Pandu. This Pandu was a very, very noble king. When he was ruling the world, he saw that all around the world, some of the lesser kings, they were becoming very aggressive and they were trying to expand their domain by torturing the neighboring countries. At one time, Pandu took lead and went all around the world and conquered practically the whole world in his times. And he brought so much wealth and everything. Wealth and gold and silver and horses and camels and chariots and everything. But he brought everything, but he was not hankering for enjoying them. You see? Very amazing. He was a very saintly type of king. He handed over everything to Bhishma Pitamaha and told him, share it between my two brothers. I want to see them happy. Dhritarashtra and so let the Kuru race have all this wealth, and I would like to spend all my time in the jungle. He was always had a taste for spending time with ascetics and living in the jungle. So he went with his two wives, not like an ascetic, of course, wearing the armor of a king, carrying bow and swords, and traveling in a golden chariot along with his two wives. He would be found roaming in the jungles. And wherever the people saw him, they came and offered him gifts with great joy, because he was a very detached king. In fact, he made Dhritarashtra the official in charge of the kingdom, and he was in the jungle, simply delighting in the forest. So, he made a hut on the top of a mountain and he was living very happily. At one time, it's a long story cut short, he saw a huge sized deer, like a stag, mating with another deer, and he released an arrow without much thought. And to his great surprise, the deer which was falling away to the ground, it began to speak. The deer spoke to him, "Oh, my dear king, you are such a virtuous king. How can you act like this? You know, you have acted so irreligiously. You've made an effort to kill us." And the king Pandu said, "I don't understand my mistake. In fact, such deers like you may create problem for the rishis and munis living in the jungle. And as a king, it's my duty to reduce the animals in the forest." But the deer spoke to him, "Your mistake was that when somebody was mating to release an arrow and kill them, that was your mistake." And the stag spoke to him that, "I am actually Kindam Rishi, but I don't have a cottage to live." So he said, "I wanted to beget a child, and me and my wife not finding a place to do this as a human being, one cannot mate in the street like a dog or a cat. So we changed our forms to forms of deer, and we were actually wanting to create a progeny, and you have made an effort to kill us. What a shameful act you did. No one should be killed in such a period of time." Similar thing you hear in Ramayana also, isn't it? When Valmiki shot an arrow at a bird which was mating, and then the Anushtup Chanda verses came out of his mouth. It sprang out of his mouth. Similarly, here you find in Mahabharata also. So, and then the Kindam Rishi said, "Just as in my mating period you try to kill me, in the same manner you will also die when you are trying to enjoy the pleasure with your wives." Not that the Rishi was envious of the king, but the Rishi, Kindam Rishi, told him that if I don't give you a curse like this, you will have to suffer in hell for a very long period of time. I want to save you from gliding down to hell, so that in this very life you will complete your bank balance of your wrong behavior. So like that, Rishi said, and then the Rishi passed away. See, I am beginning from this point for one reason. You see, in the Vedic times, the Rishis, Munis and Brahmanas were extremely powerful. The Devatas also, isn't it? See, the Devatas and Rishis, Munis, they could change their form at will. Like you see, Kindam Rishi was a Rishi, but he could change his form into that of a deer for the purpose of mating and producing a child. Because he was so cultured, even in a jungle, in a secluded bush or something, he didn't want to beget a child as a human being. A human being should not do such activity in the public. Unlike in the modern times, we see people shamelessly embracing, kissing while going in the vehicles and buses and cars and trains everywhere. So that's why the scriptures call the modern day people as dvipada pashu, two-legged animals. Because animals don't have any good sense at all. So he had that intelligence and he could actually change his form at will. And even while cursing the king, the Brahmana did it very carefully in order to benefit the king. You see? So the Rishi means they were all always well-wishers of other living beings. So he gave a curse which was actually a benediction for the king to be saved from hell. Now, after hearing this, Pandu's head, dropped down and he felt great shame. Then he returned back to his wives and told them, Kunti and Madri, the whole episode. And then Pandu said, "Now there is no use of my living like a king. Now I'll become an ascetic. I'll shave off my head. I'll cover my body with dirt. And I will not exhibit any anger towards any living entity. In fact, I will work for the good of all living beings. I'll make everybody happy. In fact, for me, joy and sorrow will be same. I will not see any difference between the two. And instead of living like a royal king, I would go door to door and beg alms and eat. And I would not accept any of the foods accepted by common people. I will eat roots and berries and fruits. And I will perform severe penance and austerities. In this way I will purify my heart and I will attain the lotus feet of the Lord in this very life. So he became very determined. And he told his two wives, you both go back and you live in the palace peacefully. You can't live like me here in the jungle. And I can manage to live like this. So Kunti and Madri, they wept bitterly. They said, dear king, we will ascend to the same regions where you are going to go. And we are willing to perform penance like you also. We will lead a very, very simple life. So Kunti said, let us make a plan for Vanaprastha immediately. She said, let us become Vanaprasthas now. Because Vanaprastha means no sex life after that. 50 plus. Then husband, wife, they devote their life fully in God's service. Let us live like this. And at the appropriate time, we can attain the spiritual regions. So they were also willing. So they also lived like ascetics. But one day Pandu called the rishis and brahmanas in the jungle and spoke to them. And he said, you see, if a king doesn't have issues, if a king has no sons, then what will happen to his Shraddha? Like I am doing Shraddha ceremony for my grandfather, for my father and other people. When I die, then who will perform for me? A Shastra say that a son, Putra, means one who delivers his ancestors. So who will deliver me? So in those days the kings used to worry if they didn't have sons. Because the Vamsha should continue for ruling the world. And for kings it was very important to have an issue. Like you find in the Bhagavatam, Chitraketu lamenting without a son. Isn't it? How much he was lamenting without a son. Ultimately, child is a gift of God, you see. Somebody may not have issues at all. And or somebody may take some child on death also from somebody, if somebody couldn't get a child. So Pandu lamented, and then one day he called Kunti and said that because I have this curse, I will not be able to get a child. And he said how Vedavyas planted the seed of three children, myself and my two brothers, we were all born like that. In the same manner, Kunti, it will be nice if a very great Rishi or Muni begets a child in your womb. Of course, I heard in one Govind Prabhu's lecture, he was telling in Mahabharata, that there are five ways to beget children. He said like Karna was begotten, how? By the seed planted through the ears of Kunti. He said that. Like that he was telling, each of the children born of Kunti, Madri, they are not born in the way that a man and woman unite in this world and the child is born. I don't know, you have heard about this. The peacock begets a child by pouring the tears into the womb of the she peacock. So the soul is transferred through the tears of the peacock. So in the same manner, there are various ways by which the demigods or the rishis, munis can beget children. And even if it was a union like the man and woman that we know of in this world, still the rishis, munis were so exalted that they could give a seat to a woman in a very detached manner. Can you imagine? Who can perform this act in such a detached way? Because the king didn't have issues. So some great personality offers a seat to the queen, and the queen is able to beget a child. Or sometimes they would give a mango, or sometimes they would give a yajna sweet rice, like it was given in the case of Dasharath. So either through sweet rice or through fruit or through different types of impregnation, various methods of impregnation. So they could do it. And there is one particular verse which says that in Kali Yuga one should not do five things. Kalau pancha vivarjayet. One of the things it says, devarena sutotpatyam. Kalau pancha vivarjayet, it says. Devarena sutotpatyam means like sometimes there are three, four brothers. One brother whose wife is fertile, but he is impotent. He is not able to beget a child. So he can request one of his brothers to give a seat to his wife, so that he can also have a child. So this was allowed in the previous yugas, but not in this Kali Yuga, it is said. And why it is especially prohibited in Kali Yuga? Because Kali Yuga people have become so degraded, like two-legged animals. This sexual act is done for the sake of pleasure and not for procreation. You see, it is done for recreation, not for procreation. So that is why it is condemned. Because then if this was allowed in Kali Yuga, it would become extremely degraded. Anybody can mix with anybody. Anybody can swap partners. I heard even in the past also there were Rakshasas who swapped partners, like Vali and Ravana. They swapped partners to enjoy. They swapped their wives for enjoying with each other. So this kind of behavior is totally animalistic. That is why in Kali Yuga this is prohibited. And besides that, we should remember, although those rishis, munis, they could offer the seat to a woman, they were not ordinary. Because they would chant a mantra and they could make the sticks in the yajna kund immediately get lit up. Is there anybody here? You chant a mantra and the stick immediately starts giving out fire. That's how they would start a Vedic yajna. They would not light up with matchsticks like we do. Just by chanting a mantra, immediately fire would begin. There are mantras to ignite fire. Yeah. Similarly, changing form at will, disappearing in one place, reappearing in another place. Similarly, the curses of Brahmanas are very powerful. They take the sacred thread. This is like the gun. Is it? So if they take the sacred thread and curse, finish, the other fellow will be finished. You see? And the curses also, like you find so many curses in the pages of scriptures and all of them come true. You have seen that? They were powerful. They didn't need any machine gun or something. Isn't it? So, of course, their blessings are also very powerful. Not only curses. If they gave blessings, then the people who received the blessings, they became very powerful. They became blessed. That is why you find Nanda Baba, Yashoda, they are inviting Brahmanas to bless the child. You will see that. So, in these kind of powerful personalities could do such kind of things. And these kind of things should never be imitated. See, this is one dangerous thing with the scriptures. People can take a point from the scripture and apply it. Even in Srila Prabhupada's times, there was one devotee who had a wife and he wanted to leave his wife and accept another man's wife. Another devotee's wife. And when the news was taken to Prabhupada, Prabhupada got wild. He said, this is less than an animal activity, to want to enjoy with another man's wife. And then that devotee was arguing, Prabhupada, we have heard that polygamy was allowed in the scriptures. One can have more than one wife. Even just Dasharatha had three wives. Why can't I have the second one or third one? So Prabhupada said, what you are doing is not polygamy. It is animalistic behavior. And also, even if you want to marry three unmarried girls, you are not allowed to marry in Kali Yuga. You can't even maintain one wife properly. How can you take care of more than one wife? So Prabhupada very vehemently condemned it. There is a lot of letter transaction you will read, Prabhupada letters. Somebody misquoting the scriptures or misconstruing wrong meaning from the scriptures by quoting polygamy to do wrong things. In the same manner, somebody may misquote these things that Vedavyas begot children at the womb of some three different women. In this way, if there is a need, such kind of things, can they be imitated? Can they be done? So this is like drinking. Lord Shiva is drinking halahal. You drink halahal, we can't even drink it actually. Before we reach it to the nose, we will be dead. One should not imitate such things foolishly from the scriptures. That is why they have to be heard from parampara properly. Actually, people don't have qualification, but they want to imitate one part of the activity. Like you see, if a woman approaches a kshatriya with a desire to have a child, the kshatriya cannot refuse according to the scriptures. But what type of kshatriyas we have seen in the shastra? They will fight with a tiger or a lion without any weapon. Is there anybody can fight with tiger or lion without a weapon? If a street dog is barking, we faint. isn't it? On the spot they will faint if they hear a street dance. And they want to imitate the Kshatriyas. Huh? So, one should be very cautious in properly understanding the scriptures from right sources, you see. So when King Pandu proposed his idea to Kunti, Kunti did not like it. She said, what is the need of having such children? We don't need any children. She said, but Pandu was very insistent. And he said, you are actually accepting a seed in your womb on my order. You are not doing any adultery. Because I am a king, I am supposed to have sons who will actually become very glorious and rule the world. Still, Kunti didn't accept. At that time, Kunti told him, I will reveal you a great confidential thing which I have not told you before. And she said, once when Durvasa had come, when I was a small child, small girl, I rendered service to him very nicely. And he called me, and he confidentially told me, listen to this mantra that I am giving you. With this mantra, you can invoke presence of any great god in this creation. This mantra has the power. And they can give you a child. So I got it long before. And she said, maybe if you really are keen to have children, we can use this mantra. And Pandu became very happy, overjoyed. And they both were discussing which demigod to invoke. After long discussion, they concluded that we want a very righteous child, one who will follow the path of dharma. Then she requested Pandu. And then they both sat in meditation, meditated for a long time, and then they prayed for dharma to appear. The dharma appeared in a very beautiful, resplendent golden chariot. And then they bowed down to him and they requested. So dharma gave them the seed of Yudhishthira Maharaj, who was born in the Jyeshtha Nakshatra, very great, righteous personality, pure personality. And Pandu became very happy that here is a son who is going to be, you know, upholding dharma. What more do we want? I am very satisfied. You see, the problem with the material world is we are not satisfied with whatever we get. We always want more. So one day Pandu told Kunti, yes, we have a righteous son. After 1 year, he told her. But I feel that Kshatriya not only needs to be righteous, but also he should be strong and chivalrous. So it will be nice if we can get a child who can be very strong. Can you please invoke the mantra again? And then he said, let me call the god of wind, Vayu. Let him come and give us a child who will be very powerful. Then they both meditated for some time, and then Vayu appeared sitting on the back of a deer. Vayu appeared and blessed her with another child, who was Bhima. Bhima was powerful. As he grew as a small child for a few months, one day Kunti and Pandu, they were sitting at the edge of a cliff. Just like you see in Lonavala, you see this beautiful thick jungle forest. Imagine you are sitting at the edge of a rock and watching the beauty of the valleys, jungle. Suddenly Kunti heard a sound of a tiger. She heard. Immediately she did like this, jumped off from her place, and the child slipped off from her lap and fell off the cliff. And she cried like anything. Immediately Pandu ran down the cliff to find out. When he saw, the child was not only safe, the child had broken the rocks to pieces. And all the rocks had, the whole rocks are all powder practically. And the child was lying very happily laughing. And Pandu was surprised, what kind of child is this? That was Bhima. He picked up the child and not even a scratch on his body. He brought him back and handed over to Kunti. Now he was very happy. Now I got a very strong son now. Now we got somebody very righteous. And then Pandu said to himself, yes, in this world, you know, success is achieved by exertion. If you exert yourself powerfully, you can achieve success. But oftentimes we find exertions are useless in front of destiny. Because exertions are subordinate to destiny. But something that can even change our destiny is somebody who becomes a devotee of the Supreme Lord. So if I can get somebody who can be a devotee of the Supreme Lord, great devotee, then it will be nice. Then he approached Kunti again and requested. Then they both had many discussions with many rishis. And the rishis told her, you can't get such a child very easily. You have to penance for 1 year. Then they stood on one leg from sunrise to sunset every day for one full year. They would practice. No food, no water for 1 year. Like this they practiced morning to evening. They would do upavas and they would practice like this. And they meditated on Indra. And Indra being the leader of the demigods and a great devotee of Vishnu. So he understood their intent. He appeared in the dream and said, I will give you a son who will be very religious and who will completely destroy all the religion in this world. And he will be most glorified. And not only he will be glorified, even by Shiva, even by Brahma he will be glorified. He will be such a great personality. And then they got Arjuna. Now, all these three children were, growing and playing in the jungle. The rishis, munis, they all gave them abundant blessings. They performed all the necessary sanskars for these children. Now, one day when Madhuri was watching all this, she privately, confidentially approached Pandu, her husband, and told him, you see, my dear husband, you know very well that I am born in a very high family. Her birth was very high birth. And she was junior in age to Kunti. I don't say that you are unfavorable to me. You are showing equal amount of love for Kunti and me. I agree with you. Yet, my heart is feeling great pain that you see, I came to know that Gandhari had 100 children. And now Kunti has 3 children. Now my greatest lamentation is you don't have any sons through me. So this is causing great pain to my heart. And then she said, it will be nice if Kunti can give her mantra to me so I can also offer you some children. She said like this. And when Pandu heard it, he said, as such I was already thinking about it in my mind. I only was afraid to approach you and ask you about this. I thought you both may have some little ego clash. Because Madhuri said she is my rival queen. So I don't know whether you were willing to receive the mantra from her and give me a child. Now that you have told me, now I will request Kunti at any cost. He said, then he approached Kunti and said, you see, you should be very gracious to your co-wife, Madhuri, in this situation. Please kindly give her the mantra and let she also have a child like you had. Kunti agreed. She said, okay, I don't have to give her the mantra. I will chant the mantra myself, but she can meditate on some devata. So she told Madhuri to sit in meditation. And she sat. And then Kunti spelled the mantra softly. And then Madhuri was thinking in her mind that, she may not give me this mantra again once more. She has given only one chance to me. So she thought, let me get twins in one shot. So she meditated on Ashwini Kumaras. And they both appeared. And then she asked for 2 children. And Nakula Sahadev were given to her. And after that, again Pandu approached Kunti. He was very happy with these 2 beautiful children. He approached Kunti and said, can you please give her the mantra once more? Yes, let us have. It's always very good to have many wonderful children. See, this goes to show that, in this world people want more and more. There's no end to that. And at that time Kunti said, how cunning she is. In one shot she got 2 children. Now if I give the mantra more, I'm afraid her children may exceed my children. Because if 2 times you get 2, what happens? You get 4 and she has 3. Is it not? She said, I won't give this mantra anymore. She said, enough of the children we got now. So you find this repeating, like in the beginning, Madhuri is feeling little envious of Gandhari, having 100 children and me having no children. Later on, she is feeling some envy for a rival wife, Kunti. She got 3 children and I have no children. And then she wants a mantra, but she has a little ego problem also, because she may or may not give, isn't it? If she turns me away saying that, you know, forget it, it's only for me, then it may be an insult. So she's approaching through her husband. And then later on, when she wants to get a child, instead of one God giving one child, she's asking for twins very intelligently. So there is a competition, you can see. You see, Mahabharata talks about the characters both from a ground level and from a, you know, elevated level, from a sadhaka level and a siddha level, both. So when we read this Mahabharata characters, we can also see that in a growing stage in devotional life also there is envy, or competition in the minds and hearts of progressive devotees, which has to be actually be overcome over a period of time. I told these things, examples, because here also we are seeing that she is very distressed by seeing the opulence of her co-wives. Like you find when Kritadyuti got a child, you know, all the other co-wives of Kritadyuti, wives of Chitraketu, they all felt envy for her, envious. Even Gandhari felt envy also. When Gandhari came to know that the three Pandava children were born, the news went to her, and she didn't get a child. And then she said, "This Veda Vyas promised me that I will get, you know, children, 100 children. I didn't get even one child." So she was beating on her belly. And because of that, what came out was only a lump of flesh. Later on, Vedavyas, to keep his word true, he came and cut it into 100 pieces and put it in 100 pots with ghee and everything, and he brought out the Kauravas later. So this is one thing we learn here, that this type of competitive mentality of wanting. Actually, I want something which others are having. Actually, there are four types of envy. One is called dvesha. Dvesha means hatred. This hatred, dvesha, is actually dormant hatred. You don't act on it. You just feel it. You feel hatred for somebody. You look at somebody and you feel hatred. And kala means active hatred. Kala means one makes plans to do some harm to the other person or something, or to do something to the other person. That's called kala. And asuya is even 1 degree higher. Asuya. Na martya bhuya. Na mar. He says, "Acharya mam vijaniya na avamanyeta karhichit na martya buddhya asuyeta sarvadeva mayoguru." In Bhagavatam, Krishna says in 11th canto, he says, asuya means exactly wanting to usurp the same position what someone else is having. Like, you know, like some people say, you know, "Hey, see that fellow, you know, how wonderful he sings. Hey, see him, they are calling him to stage and they are rewarding him." When somebody is saying, that means I also want that. Whenever somebody is glorifying somebody for something, what is likely? "Hey, do you know in what post he is holding now? Now, Prabhu, he is in this post." What does that mean? What does that mean? I also want the same thing. See, we admire those things which we want to be also. So if somebody is saying, "Prabhu, do you know what a wonderful consciousness he had? He simply became a servant of all Vaishnavas. He simply wanted to become a pure devotee." What does that mean? He wants to become a pure devotee. If you are admiring something, that's what you are aspiring for. On the other hand, if somebody is appreciating some material position, like somebody came and told me, "Prabhuji, you don't know, he is close contact with MLA, with that MP. You know, he goes to parliament and shakes hands with Prime Minister. You know, you don't know. Do you know he has got 20 Rolls Royce standing in his house?" What does that mean? Actually, whatever our mind is contemplating, that's what we want. This is actually an external expression of our internal desire. That is actually asuya. And the fourth level of envy is called matsar. Matsarata means what? "How can that fellow flourish? Kill him, destroy him, finish him. Asauhatamaya shatruhu hanishye chaparanapi yeshwaroham mahambhogi siddhoham balavansuki." Who is that enemy? who is prospering in my presence, whether I grow or not, I have to destroy him. I cannot see him prosper. Like you see sometimes builders, they buy one property, they buy another property. In between, some property is in somebody else's hands. Sometimes you find huge builders and all. If there is a chota mota builder, they will say, "Hey, vacate this place. Otherwise, I will finish you." Yeah, they threaten. Sometimes they beat him. Sometimes they finish him also, actually. They do that also. And this is material world. This is called Matsar. So Mahavishnu Maharaj says, this Matsar is like Machar, he says. Why it's like Machar? This Machar, mosquito, his whole body is made of blood only. Still he wants to suck blood. That is why he is saying Matsar. Matsar means one is having enough, but one is actually envious of somebody having, you know, equally or little more. More than oneself, like that. So that's why he's saying this is Matsarata. These are all envy, actually. Actually, a person who wants to become a serious devotee, one should actually get rid of this envy by understanding the temporary nature of the material world. Everything we possess for some time and we leave and go. We don't hold anything at the time of death. This is one way to remember that we don't hold anything in this world for a long time. Whether we have positions or posts or money or gold or fame also, everything is finished. Somebody may say, even today Hitler is remembered, or Napoleon Bonaparte is remembered, but when Pralaya comes, after that, when again the world is created, who knows who is Napoleon? Who knows who is Hitler? They may be remembered for some period of time, but all the names of the historical personalities gets drowned in the sands of time over a period of time. So, that is one lesson we learn here. Another thing, as Prabhupada says in the purport, in Bhagavad Gita, sexual intercourse for begetting children is accepted as righteous. A person sexually inclined for simple sense gratification, however, is unrighteous, he says. So, Krishna says this, dharma aviruddho bhuteshu kamasmi bharatarshava. The Shastras are very clear in what they are trying to say. There is no ambiguity in this. Like for example, if one wants to marry, one can have sex life and beget children. And one should actually, if a grihastha unites only for procreating children, such a family is also called as brahmachari. It's called grihastha brahmachari. Because just like a lion unites only once in 12 years to beget a child, that's all. So you can imagine, so such a grihastha is like a lion who uses sex life only for procreating children and not otherwise. That's the highest standard. But there are some lower standards also that Prabhupada mentioned for those who are entering into grihastha ashram. But the highest standard was frequently mentioned by Prabhupada in many places in his purport. So other than this, I told you the other avenues which were used in the ancient times, like Vedavyas giving children or the devatas giving children, they are all completely prohibited in this age of Kali. And sex before marriage, sex outside marriage, sex with a partner other than one's wife, these are all considered extremely irreligious, and deadly punishments await one in the hell in the future. And as Prabhupada mentions here, why the sexual intercourse for pleasure is condemned here? Because that pleasure is compensated by raising the child. See, raising a child is a very difficult thing, if you see. You know, actually brahmacharis have no knowledge of it. What is raising a child? Once Isvaranas Radhanath Swami Maharaj was telling in a class, he said, he was telling one brahmachari, "You have to decide whether you want to hold a mridangam or a child." He said, mridangam holding is more easy. You can just beat it a few times. Child, you cannot beat. It will scream like anything. Rather, a child will beat you back. So Maharaj said, you should be sympathetic. Because raising a child is not easy. Child, as a child is growing, passing stool and urine, and you have to change diaper 2 dozen times a day. And then not only changing diaper is not the only thing, the child will cry. the child will weep, the child, see the whole day the child is having great fun, and in the night the child will create a lot of trouble. It's because the child sleeps in day also, isn't it? And the night, in the middle of the night, child will get up and trouble the mother so much. Actually, initially those who desire to have a child, later on they will think, why did I have the child? People lament like that. It's not a very easy thing to raise a child. So, the pleasure of uniting between man and woman is compensated by raising the child. By the time you bring the child to the age of 13 or 14, you know, parents practically shed so much of energy, sweat and toil in raising the child. And after that, sometimes the children become ungrateful. That is even more painful. The children don't realize what parents have done for them all these years. Like, you know, when sometimes even all of us, if we think about our childhood, sometimes there have been instances where we were very close to death. Isn't it? Immediately the parents have to take the children and run to the doctor. So many times, how many times? Similarly, you know, raising a child includes providing for the child the food, the clothing, the shelter, and tolerating all the child's all kinds of troubles that he creates. So this is Krishna's arrangement in material nature. You want this husband-wife relationship, then you have to compensate for this by begetting a child and raising a child. Similarly, a brahmachari, he has the hankering for sex life. When one is endeavoring to be a brahmachari, that hankering can be mitigated by awakening Krishna consciousness in a very serious fashion, by intensifying one's Krishna consciousness. Gradually this hankering will vanish, and one can see that, you know, these petty pleasures we enjoy in this world, Prahlad Maharaj says, dukkaushadam tadapi dukkam atadiyaham bhuman brahmami vadame tavadasya yogam. He's telling to Narasimhadev, oh my dear Lord Narasimha, dukkha aushadam tadapi dukkam atadyaham. He's saying the solution for, the remedy for misery in this world is more miserable than the misery itself. He's saying. And that is why he's saying, atadyaham bhuman brahmami, I'm wandering in this world. Vadame, please tell me, tava dasya yogam, your devotional service. Dasya yogam. Let me simply become your devotee rather than chasing the petty pressures of this world here and there, he is saying. So one can get this realization by being a grihastha or by being a brahmachari. Both ways. Ultimately, we both ashramas come to the same point, ultimately. So by attentiveness to the message of the scriptures, one can become free from the hankering or from frustration. One can become elevated. So, on the other hand, if somebody wants to enjoy the pleasure without compensation, that becomes sinful. Like, you know, like nowadays people have easy access to internet. Like somebody thinks, if I marry a woman, I'll be satisfied. But with one woman, one doesn't become satisfied. One is very lusty. One has married a woman, but still the craving for enjoying is there. After some time, one becomes bored with one woman's beauty. Then one goes to internet and looking at all kinds of, you know, obscene pictures in the internet. Once my spiritual master was telling in a class, if you see the nude pictures of women, it's like seeing your mother nude. He said, because matravar paratareshu, other than your wife, every woman is your mother. Will you want to see your mother naked? Will you strip her naked anytime? Will you do that? So he said, if you are looking at such kind of pictures, it is equivalent to that. He said that. So these are all done because of mala in the chitta, impurity in the heart, because of that. That's the purpose saying this. So, and then and seeing those things naturally puts more dirt in the heart, and then one indulges in horrible activities which cannot be spoken also. One, it's like a train going off track, derailed train falling off. Similarly, you find somebody indulges in, he gives up his wife just like Ajamila did. He gave up his righteous and chaste wife and he went to a prostitute, and he completely messed up with his whole life. So Srila Prabhupada saved hundreds and thousands and millions of souls from getting derailed. in their life by giving these pure principles of living, a clean life. If you want to marry, you can marry, have a wife, both husband and wife, you advance in devotional life. Don't go off track. One should not try to indulge with other men's wives, nor should a woman, in the name of being a modern woman, behave loosely with husbands of other women. Like, one devotee man got married to a girl, and one day this girl called practically 24 boys to her house, and she said, "These are all my friends, boyfriends. I am writing mail to them, I am calling them on phone and having relations. So this is very disturbing to anybody. Actually, Shastras don't approve of this. The woman should be chaste to her husband, and even if there is some friendship, it should be very formal. It cannot be very intimate. So otherwise one can expect an inevitable danger in subsequent times. It's actually a woman becomes glorious in what? Like, you find Kunti and Madhuri, I told you so many things now, but later on you find, when Pandu leaves his body, Madhuri is telling Kunti, "Kunti, although we both are co-wives of Pandu, you are more expert and mature in taking care of children. So let us decide who will enter the funeral pyre." So Madhuri said, "I would like to enter, because one of the two has to enter and the other one has to take care of the children." So Madhuri entered the fire and Kunti was willing to raise the children. And see, both of them have a service attitude. See, they both are willing to enter the funeral pyre of Pandu, because they both couldn't be separated from Pandu. It's very painful for them. But for the sake of service, Kunti was willing to stay back and raise the children. And Madhuri was willing to enter the fire. You see, it's very amazing. So Kunti was glorified by Madhuri for being able to raise the children very maturely. This is glory of a woman. If a woman can keep the house clean, spick and span, and if she can keep the puja room clean, if she can cook very nice prasad, if she can speak in such a way that the mother-in-law, father-in-law, brother-in-law, sister-in-law, everybody in the home becomes happy. She can create a festival atmosphere at home by her good quality, by her feminine good qualities. And if she knows to cook nice prasad, because once nice prasad goes inside, everybody is peaceful. Is it not true? That is why in South India, if a boy has to be married to a girl, the first thing they will tell in the engagement day when they take a boy, generally they would bring some tiffin, some upma, something, idli, sambar, something. So the boy's mother will ask, "Who cooked this?" Generally, the ready-made answer they have. The girl's parents will say, "Oh, that was cooked by our daughter only." And if you go to the kitchen and see what daughter did, she was just bringing some water. She was just cleaning the kitchen. Whole cooking was done by the girl's mother. But the girl may be a very, educated software engineer. She knows only to type the keys in a computer. But they will generally ask. Because, it's not wrong to be a software engineer. But you can be a software engineer along with knowing good cooking also. Because the specific qualifications you will read, Vishrambena, Atma Shauchena. If you read the section of Kapila, there he says, Vacha Madurayacha Bho, he's saying. Vacha means, one of the powerful weapons of a woman is her sweet speech. By her sweet speech, she can conquer the hearts of everybody at home. But if a woman lacks sweet speech, submissive behavior, see, by telling that woman should be submissive, we don't mean she should be exploited. If a woman is exploited, because women were exploited, that is why the so-called modern age has come where everything is degrading. But a woman, if a woman knows submissiveness, by her submissiveness she can conquer her husband, conquer her mother-in-law also, father-in-law, everybody. She can win over everybody. That is actually real winning. Like we say, Krishna is Madan Mohan and Radharani is Madan Mohan Mohini. Similarly, husband brings all the money and he is the king of the house, but she is the queen of the king also. By her sweet speech and good behavior and her ability to maturely raise the children like Kunti could do. That's why Madhuri is telling, I cannot do like you. I come from a very elite, a high class family. But I have not been trained in raising the children. You can do very nicely. You do it. And I will enter the fire, she says. So, these are all taught. These principles are taught in the scriptures very powerfully, very wonderfully. And Prabhupada taught about this clean life. He would often quote when he went to the West. Pravrittim cha nivrittim cha jana na vidura asura na shaucham na pichacharo na satyam teshu vidyate. One time, the name is not mentioned in the Leelamrita, but although everybody knows who it is, we don't want to mention the name. One Mataji, one from New York Temple, when Prabhupada was in San Francisco, she wrote to Prabhupada that, Prabhupada, my boyfriend ditched me. She cheated me. He said he will marry me and he enjoyed with me. And then in this way he has cheated and gone away. And then Prabhupada wrote to her that you take shelter of Krishna. Krishna will never ditch you. Krishna will never cheat you. And Krishna is capable of giving shelter to hundreds and thousands of anatha women. Like you say, 16,108 women in the Bhaumasura's jail, isn't it? Krishna gave all of them shelter, accepted them all. So Krishna can surely accept you. And you simply become Krishna's devotee and give your heart to him. He will never cheat you. Prabhupada wrote back to her. So, like that, Mataji was cheated. Similarly, in the modern times, we find many boys and girls now have free, loose relationships, imitating the West. And for the sake of bodily pleasure, which is like meant for the hogs and dogs, for this petty pleasure, boys and girls are mixing very freely and preparing a ghastly hell for themselves. And they cannot control their mind and senses because they don't know anything higher. Because of gross ignorance. And some of them get into AIDS and they die like flies and mosquitoes, they die like that. Simply because of some common cold or something, they can die. Or somebody may get other sexually transmitted diseases. And the modern times are the most unfortunate period, this Kali Yuga. So, Prabhupada is writing these things in the purport. As he says here, a person sexually inclined for simple sense gratification, however, is unrighteous. He says, actually, Diti was righteous because she was not going outside the marriage. She was asking for children within her marriage, so it was righteous. Prabhupada writes that. But the modern scenario can be changed only by loudly preaching the philosophy far and wide. Because many people are actually living in ignorance. Even if we didn't come to Prabhupada's purports and Prabhupada's shelter, we don't know how our life would have been. We would have become completely degraded like cats and dogs. We were saved. That is why Prabhupada was more pleased with those who were willing to go out and preach and bring more and more people into the fold of this movement than those who came and offered Prabhupada some flowers or fruits and offered obeisances. Prabhupada said, okay. Anybody can offer flowers and fruits to you and just sit at your feet and keep glorifying you. Jai Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada wanted people to go out and preach, and he himself very vigorously preached also. Once Prabhupada was in North India, he got a sunstroke and fell on the ground. And one of his friends was passing in a car. He saw somebody and then he realized it was his own friend. He picked him up and put Prabhupada in the car and took him to a doctor. At that time, Prabhupada was distributing battery-guarded magazines. You can imagine, up to the point of, you know, being knocked by the sun, and that much Prabhupada worked hard. Basically, he stretched himself to the limits, actually, in preaching. We all can ask ourselves, are we stretching ourselves to limits? We sometimes stretch ourselves to digest the food we have eaten. Because sometimes we eat beyond limits and it takes too much difficulty to digest the food. But Prabhupada stretched himself to give out Krishna consciousness, you see. So by reading the lives of such great souls, we can take inspiration. Otherwise, people will never know these truths. Prabhupada's presentation of the absolute truth is so simple. And on one hand, he is presenting Krishna consciousness, is the absolute path, and then he is also giving practical guidelines. In Varnashrama, man, woman, children, son, daughter, father, in-laws, how everybody should live, what are the duties of everybody. Very, very powerful. So today also I heard it's Samaksha Maharaj's appearance day? Disappearance day today, I heard, yeah. I'll just say one thing about Samaksha Maharaj. You know, he's only Samaksha Maharaj. I read it in TKG diary. You know, he's a very intimate disciple of Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada considered him to be his right hand. And one day, Prabhupada had given Samaksha Maharaj a key, small key. And Prabhupada told him that, I don't give this key to anybody. I only always use it. And Prabhupada said, what Prabhupada used to do, if you open that lock with a key, inside the lock you'll find one more key. And that lock you take it and go somewhere and open that key, and then you'll find one more key. And then you open, then there'll be money in the treasury and all. Prabhupada used to preserve it like that. And this key Prabhupada was keeping. And he had become very sick, Prabhupada. So he told, generally I don't give it to anybody. Because Prabhupada was spending penny by penny, keeping strict account. Some of our devotees sometimes spend money like water, not knowing its value. Prabhupada would write down every small thing, 10 rupees for rickshaw and everything. He was writing down, pakka accounting. So because he was sick, every time people had to come to him, so he told Samaksha Maharaj. Samaksha Maharaj said, Prabhupada, I'll keep it carefully, you don't worry, give it to me. So he took it, but then he lost it. And then the news came to Prabhupada. Prabhupada was very angry, upset. And then they brought some key opening person, and then they tried to open. At last they opened and everything. And then
Trupta asa hai. Mi pratyek goshti cha jnata hai ani mi kontyahi karmane baddha hot nahi. Jo majhya baddal che he satya janto to suddha karma phalani baddha hot nahi. Prachin kalatil sarva mukta jivani majhya divya swarupala janun tya pramane karma kele. सूर्यदेवासहित त्या सर्वांनी आपल्या कर्तव्याचे पालन केले. अर्जुना, तू सुद्धा त्यांच्या पदचिन्हांचे अनुसरण करून आपले कर्म केले पाहिजे. परंतु केवळ मन आणि इंद्रिय नियंत्रित करण्याचा जो स्तर आहे, मी त्याच्यावर नाही का? जर एखाद्याचे हृदय शुद्ध नसेल तर त्याने ते शुद्ध करण्याच्या कार्याला लागले पाहिजे. जर एखाद्याचे हृदय शुद्ध आहे तर त्याने इतरांसाठी आदर्श म्हणून कार्य केले पाहिजे. तथापि जर तू या उपदेशांचे पालन समजून न घेताच केले तर तू अंध अनुयायी ठरशील. तू बकऱ्यांप्रमाणे अंधानुकरण करीत कर्म करण्यापेक्षा कर्माचा परिणाम काय होईल याचा विचार करून बघ. प्राचीन काळातील मुक्त जीवांनी जसे कर्म केले तसे तुम्ही करता. त्याचा अर्थ असा की एखाद्याने दुसऱ्या प्रकारे कर्म करू नये? कृपया याबद्दल मला सांगा. कर्म काय आणि अकर्म काय हे निश्चित करण्यात बुद्धिमान लोकही गोंधळून जातात. आता मी त्याचे वर्णन करतो. कर्म काय, विकर्म काय आणि निक्रियता काय हे एखाद्याने नीटपणे समजून घेतले पाहिजे. जो कर्मात फलरहित कर्म पाहतो आणि तथाकथित त्यागात कर्मफळ पाहतो तो मनुष्यातला बुद्धिमान मनुष्य होय. कृष्ण, एखादे उदाहरण देऊ शकशील का?